Yes, well, now very much to the present day and to the ruling of the High Court yesterday on the so-called Citizenship 7, which has the Turnbull government fighting to protect itself from the loss of two cabinet ministers. Labor's deputy leader, Tanya Plibersek, has said that her party wouldn't plan mischief over this. Mind you, I do notice that the head of strategy for Labor, Tony Burke, doesn't seem to be making the same sort of declaration. Tanya Plibersek has indicated it could, though, force a revisit to penalty rate cuts and the establishment of a banking royal commission, both issues the government decided by one vote earlier this year. So we'll see how that plan turns out, along with a range of others. Laura Tingle is the political correspondent of the Australian Financial Review, and she joins me now. Good morning, Laura.
G'day, Geraldine. How are you?
Very good. Dare I utter those immortal words, Laura? Please explain.
Well, Geraldine, I think that there's a lot of hyperbole going on about the government being about to fall and things, and it's certainly true that this judgment has left the government having to have a fairly hairy few weeks before the end of the year and before Barnaby Joyce's by-election result. But I think the interesting thing for us non-legal eagle aficionados is in the broad that the High Court has not followed any of the helpful suggestions and arguments put forward by the Turnbull government and has taken what you'd describe as a very black letter law approach to Section 44 of the Constitution, which essentially says you can't be a dual citizen. That's oversimplifying, of course. And it has found that five of seven MPs and senators fall foul of that division, and two of them don't. Now, having said that, in some ways, I think the court's done the government and the rest of us a bit of a favour, because the government was making all these very convoluted arguments about, you know, various interpretations that could have been made on Section 44 and the status of various MPs and senators. By rejecting that and going for this very straightforward approach, I think they've actually avoided a lot of question marks that would have subsequently come about the status of people in the current parliament and in the future parliaments. I think, without a doubt, there's room for a review now of Section 44, but I don't think it's anywhere near as sweeping a review as might have been the case if there'd been a more adventurous ruling. And I think also, I think there were deep concerns within the government about what this ruling might mean for a lot of other members of their side and possibly the other side, and I suspect that the outcome of the case is that that is now not the case. So, you know, it's been a nightmare. The Nationals in particular have made a terrible hash of it, and, you know, only with their chutzpah and gall could be now running around insisting Nigel Scullion be deputy acting prime minister while Malcolm Turnbull's overseas.
He's cancelled that trip now, hasn't he?
Well, he's certainly delayed his departure for it. And this is partly because
this is to Israel for the Beersheba anniversary.
Yes, and also as a sort of bilateral trip. Mm. It was regarded earlier in the week as a fairly straightforward thing that with Barnaby Joyce knocked out that Julie Bishop would be acting Prime Minister. They haven't announced that yet, which is because the Nationals are arcing up and saying that the acting Nationals leader, Senator Nigel Scullion, should be in the job, which is just ludicrous, frankly. Once again, it's one of those things of Most people outside the government would say, well, seriously, Malcolm Turnbull, the Nationals have made a complete mess of this. They've lost their leader and their deputy leader in this debacle, and only sort of saved the one guy who actually acted honourably and stood down when his citizenship was under threat, which is Matt Canavan. They really aren't in a position to be dictating the terms. Just tell them to, you know, get back in their box straight away.
Yes, look, there's so many strands to this because I want to go to the politics, but, you know, I actually think that I wonder if a lot of listeners we'll be seeing it differently from the political class, because I can see the political class has decided this is a clear set of rules and we know where we are. Mm. And I don't know whether listeners think this is exactly where we ought to be at all. It seems sort of vexatious. I don't know whether it's in the national interest. And I noticed that Gabriel Appleby, writing a very good piece in The Conversation, the online journal, associate professor at the UNSW Law School, has said, yes, it's certainty, but is it a desirable state of affairs? It would seem that denial of eligibility to a dual national is a particularly blunt instrument to achieve the notion that was in the original constitution that, you know, you can't have even a perception of dual loyalties. On the one hand, it captures many people who do not even know they're dual citizens. On the other hand, the relatively easy step of renouncement means that these people who do have a split allegiance but who want to run for parliament have only to fulfil these formalities to do so. Like, I think a lot of us are probably looking on saying, what on earth is happening here?
Well, look, all good points, Geraldine. And the court itself says in its unanimous judgment that this looks like a very blunt way of looking at this. The question becomes what you do about it from here. I mean, whatever the court, let's just keep in mind, whatever the court did, it was going to require subsequent action and response from, you know, the political system, if you like. Now, the Prime Minister has foreshadowed that he's going to refer this to the Joint Standing Committee on Electoral Matters to look at the implications, both of Section 44 and the electoral laws. Now, I think another constitutional expert, Anne Toomey, suggested a few months ago that one really obvious option for responding to this crisis, if you want to call it a crisis, would be to look at the terms of and the rules for nominating and becoming an MP or a senator. And the idea is that you just allow a sort of a window of time in the electoral laws between when you nominate and the processes are finalised,
so giving you more time to be absolutely sure.
Exactly, so that you can nominate and then go off and seek and clarify exactly what your status is. Now, some people could say, well, you should do that before you even nominate. Well, obviously, some people don't. And as you say, we now have a multicultural society. It is all very complicated, but this would give the system and people who all, you know, we all have very complicated sort of hereditary stories these days, and it would give some scope for considering this. Now, I think this is a really important issue that's going to have to be considered over the next few months. I suppose there's another question here, Geraldine. Should the Parliament be doing this itself? I mean, I think the Joint Committee on Electoral Matters is a very eminent body, blah, blah, but, you know, this is a problem for the Parliament. Should we be getting outside experts to look at this as well?
Yes, I mean, the question is the flexibility. You know, if we're going to not, because even she suggests we probably won't go to a referendum now, but there will be more allowances built in to hope, you know, the last thing we want is to be preventing people from standing who might actually have a complicated backstory. Okay, let's look at the politics of it. From what I can see, I mean, we've got a by-election coming up that Barnaby Joyce will be contesting, and I just wonder what sort of, what do you think that's going to have a lot of impact in the next few weeks on the government, where we get to this very, because they're now, strictly speaking, they are now minority government, are they not?
Well, they've got 75 seats in 150-seat parliament, but essentially they have the numbers to, they've got the support of the crossbenchers on supply and confidence. That's been long clear. Anything that the coalition brings up, sorry, anything that the Labor Party brings up, like, say, trying to get a banking royal commission up, isn't going to work because the Speaker will give his casting vote for the status quo. He's already indicated that. So they've still got the biggest number of votes in the House. So that's happening. I think one of the interesting questions about the by-election, Geraldine, is that a lot of it is going to be contested almost certainly at the same time as the Queensland state election. Now, that's expected to be announced tomorrow. Oh. It'll be a shorter campaign by a week, I think it is, than the New England by-election. But there's all sorts of interesting things going on up in Queensland, obviously, with One Nation on the rampage up there. And this relates back in directly into the affairs of the Nationals and the LNP and the government, because there's a lot of tensions between the Queensland LNP and the Liberals. There's this brawl going on about who should replace Fiona Nash in New South Wales in the Senate, and the Liberals are saying, well, it should be the next person on the ticket, which is a Liberal. So there's all these internal warfare issues which will be playing out at the same time as these two elections. So,
and will that affect Barnaby's chances, do you think, in New England?
I suspect not. I suspect Barnaby will basically be fine because it's a very splintered field. It could be a very sort of heated by-election, but I don't think there's anybody really regards him as in great danger. But I think as we look at things today, the risks for the government in the by-election aren't the outcome. It's in what
In the relationships.
In the relationships and in the sort of, and shall we say, the vibe of the future.
Holly Hughes is a Liberal, is replacing Fiona Nash, I heard last night on Late Line. Is that correct?
Well, you know, this has just been this brawl going on about whether she should or whether she shouldn't. So,
what a devastating moment for Fiona Nash and for the Nationals generally.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And as I said earlier, you know, they've lost, you know, you shake your head about this. They've lost their leader and their deputy leader in one fell swoop. And I think Fiona Nash in particular is a real loss, because it's a pretty rudderless show, Geraldine, the Nats. I mean, what do they stand for? Where are they going? They sort of basically are running around and stomping their foot and, you know, threatening to hold their breath till they turn blue on things. But it's generally worse because Malcolm Turnbull has been so vulnerable, thanks to Tony Abbott.
Laura, I'm just looking at the clock and we have to go, and I'm sorry to I love all your analogies there. Thank you very much indeed for fronting up on Saturday morning to give us that insight.
My pleasure.
Laura Tingle from the Australian Financial Review with some suggestions as about where we head next.